You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation. Hello, everybody. This is your old friend Will Bluewater coming to you from an undisclosed location deep in the backwoods of Tennessee. I'm acting all secret because our guest tonight is really heavyweight. Anyway, without further ado, Barry Thomas, nobody can introduce you like you can, so go ahead, please.
In this world of Israeli politics, I was a major celebrity, primarily because I put out a book called Who Murdered Yitzhak Rabin? It eventually was translated to seven languages. It made number one in Israel. I was a celebrity there. No fooling around, mostly because I've got that entirely right. My book, Who Murdered Rabin, I don't have to change a word in it. After all these years, I got it right. Now, that made me kind of a political celebrity in Israel, but also in the States, where it was published and was, well, it was reprinted in the Jewish press, and you've got Orthodox Jews by the hundreds of thousands reading this book. It was a big deal. Now, it's the only thing that I can say made the top of the Israeli best-selling charts. But I had four other books translated into Hebrew, and they're far more conspiratorial, if you can believe that. Rabin was knocked off, not by this wild man who got a gun and shot him in the back. Rabin was knocked off in a plot organized by Shimon Peres. That is the president of Israel. He's a serial murderer. Rabin wasn't the first. Well, his underlings were the bodyguard Yoram Rubin, who actually shot him, and the head of the Secret Services at the time, his name was Carmi Gilon, he organized the shooting by his man, let's put it that way. I got this darn right, and this book, it was not ignored in Israel. It was the biggest darn scandal going there. I was front page news there for years. Now, that's my background. Now, to get Who Murdered Rabin, I'll tell you a foreground so I don't have to do this after we start being interviewed by the latest events. You go to lulu.com, that's www.lulu.com. You'll see a search box, write in my name, C-H-A-M-I-S-H. It'll take you to all my books. Rabin is sold in a very expensive color version. Don't buy it. Buy the black and white version, and you'll see that, really, I wrote one of the great conspiracy books of all time, and I use that term because there really isn't another proper term. Rabin was murdered in a conspiracy to get Peres into power. That was the Rabin assassination. That's who I am in Israel, and eventually it got very dangerous for me. Very, very risky to live in Israel. I was in the hospital, a month out of three. I had a deadly stroke and then a near-deadly car accident, and I was treated like garbage in the hospitals. It's a long story, but I decided my time had run out. I have not got a prayer of living for long in Israel. They deal with people who open their mouths and are a threat to them, like any other mafia in the world. There is a slight difference between the left and the right. Not very much. It's less than you have in the States, which is almost nothing. But what it comes down to is the right are a teensy bit more concerned about dealing with Jewish lives. The left will knock off whoever you are, left, right, Jewish, Arab. They don't care. They just knock off. The political murders in Israel, now this is a subject I can go through at length, but I'm not going to scare your audience. It is very dangerous to become especially a right-wing political figure in Israel. They will kill you, and they've killed off a lot.
Well, let me interrupt. The reason why I found out about you is I've got another friend who had a run-in with, as I recall, the Trigger Man, and this guy infiltrated a group that my friend was involved with called the Autonomous Authority of Yesha, and they were trying to establish an authority.
What was it called?
The Authority of the Autonomous Authority for Yesha.
So never heard of it.
And this guy...
It sounds like a Secret Service operation.
No.
It doesn't sound real.
Well, you know who Magid Ben-Yosef is?
No.
Okay, he was. He's at Torah-Voice.org, and he was an American who went to Israel as a journalist. He worked for Middle East TV for a while, and then he went to work at the Jerusalem Post. And while he was there. Oh, let's see, he was involved with he found the cave that Vendel Jones eventually excavated and got the temple incense out of. But anyway, he was involved with trying to establish a political authority on the West Bank, and his group was infiltrated by the guy who was the Trigger Man, and the guy turned out to be...
What are you talking about? The Trigger Man was Yoram Rubin. He didn't infiltrate anybody. Now, you might be discussing Avishai Raviv.
No, yeah, Avishai, yeah, that's who it was. Sorry. Well, that's kind of how I came to know who you are, and because of the coincidence. And
well, you can go on with your story. How did Avishai Raviv infiltrate this organization, which, by the way, I've never heard of? Let's not make it like it was a power. It was not a powerhouse.
It wasn't.
Nonetheless, if Avishai Raviv was there, who exactly did he infiltrate? What was he doing? I need to know this. This is news to me.
I can just send you an email address. I can't remember all the details. There were a small group trying to do something back in the 90s, and it didn't get far. But long story made short, my friend knew this guy. Had actually met him and been involved with meetings, and they got shut down, because of this. And I'm familiar with the intrigue.
Not enough.
Oh, I'm sure.
Not enough. This is rumor. And by the way, if this person, whoever he is, wants to write me and tell me what exactly Ravine did to his group, it would help my cause a whole lot.
Sure, sure. I'll give you his contact details later. But
all right, fair enough. Again, if you know Raviv, and it sounds to me like you've got just basically scratching the surface.
Yep.
What was going on was a lot more serious than that. He was urging people to, he was urging him to kill. And in more than, I can think of two instances, people who know Avishai, knew Avishai Ravine too well, died mysteriously, pushed off buildings in one case. And the point is, it's a very ugly scene, but you're not describing it in the detail it deserves.
Delusion?
No.
I'm sorry.
I left a gaping gap for a reaction, but I didn't get it. Oh, I'll go into the modern, what's going on right now? Now, knowing your listeners, and I don't know how many there are, I hope we get an audience, and I hope that this recording is not the last time I'm on, but let's just look at what is going on in Israel today, and I'll try and put some background. I have much easier radio shows where people know me, and they've been following me, so in this case, I've got to start from nowhere. Look, put it simply, I'm going to do it in lay language, elementary school language, but let's get to what Migron is and what is about to happen in Israel. Now, Migron is a settlement in Samaria. There was a decision by the Supreme Court, not the government, mind you, the Supreme Court, and we'll talk about what the Supreme Court in Israel is, and it's not about justice. It is really working against most of the population of Israel. They ruled that Migron would be evacuated. Evacuated is the word for bulldoze. Pardon me?
I just laughed because I've seen pictures.
Well, they come in the middle of the night with bulldozers. They pull the family out of their houses. Sometimes the dog is left behind. It doesn't matter. They just walk. Well, they just pummel in front of their eyes these people's homes. Straightforward. That's what evacuation is. It's a euphemism for destruction. Now, what the court said is go and destroy Migron. And they went nuts, the people there. They've been there for years. The land is nobody's Palestinian land. They were just picked out of the blue. They were picked, ultimately, to break down Israel's, whatever remains, of Israel's unity. You have Jews coming in, the IDF, coming in with bulldozers to force Jews out of their houses. You're not gonna like the IDF very much. And we'll talk about this shortly, my interview with Tamar Yonis, and remind me about that. But what happened was there was another decision. The government decided to go against the Supreme Court and delay talk of evacuation till 2015. There was another case where the government, the law of Israel, all right, the ultimate authority, higher than the Knesset apparently, decided to give the IDF until August 1st to destroy or evacuate Migron. Now, just, I'm going to read straight from the decision. This is from, well, you've never heard of him, Asher Grunis. He's the Supreme Court president, corrupt. Here's what he ruled. This is a necessary component of the rule of law to which all are subject. As part of Israel's values as a Jewish and democratic state. Now, look what he adds. Migron residents may harbor justified resentment against the state and its authorities. Justified? Well, of course they're going to harbor resentment of their homes. $200,000 of their lives were bulldozed in front of their eyes. You can bet they're going to be resentful, but justified coming from the ruling means they should be. Now, here is why this settlement, Migron, was ruled to be bulldozed. Here's the ruling. The court president said that the state had made it clear that along... can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, the fuzziness went away. The state had made it clear that all along that settlements cannot be built on private Palestinian land. Who says it's private Palestinian land? There is no one holds the leash. There is no proof that it's Palestinian land. It was vacant land. No court on earth would say that it was owned by Palestinians. But the Supreme Court of Israel, well, that's what I'm going to just read what they said in their ruling. As the state has made clear, no body is authorized to permit the establishment of a settlement on private land. That's their ruling. That means that these families and their children, and they have lots of children, they're all going to be huddled under blankets in the middle of the night watching their house being destroyed. Now, I'm going to quote this ruling again so you understand what Israel is. Israel is not a place of democracy. It's a mafia state. That's what it is. But Lord, if you're right-wing or religious, the war that's being fought against you. Here is the ruling continued. As the state has made clear, no body is authorized to permit the establishment of a settlement on private land. And then they cite the former Supreme Court president, her name was Dorit Benesch, on the original ruling. Now, look, I'm starting new with your listeners. Dorit Benesch in 2007 took $20 million from the Ford Foundation in one check, and she handed out to very anti-Israeli Jews, pro-Palestinian Jews. She is part and parcel of this war that's being fought against anyone in Israel who is not playing ball with their destruction.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look, Nation. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Will Blue Otter. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now, this AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason. But I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them. And that, to me, is the most important thing in a man. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, and I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist. When I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm a, you know, it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position. You're being conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room, and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and they're not going to whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that. But the average person will help. But of course now they've got so damn many charities and there's so much professionalism, you know, there's if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity, and by the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So, I mean, Christ, I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
But here is what she wrote in 2011. We can only wish that the residents of the outpost will come to their senses and agree to accept their duty not to appear as lawbreakers, and that they will settle on any other state that the state deems fit to allow them. Wow, look at that. They're not coming to their senses and agreeing to be homeless. And they don't really care if they appear to be lawbreakers. What you've got is her message is just pick up and move. That's it. We have decided we're going to bulldoze your houses on behalf of whom. Now, here's where it gets really profound and really deep, and I'm not sure I want to dive into this right now. The on behalf of whom business, it is not on behalf of Jews. There is a very, very serious agenda working against Israel, and it's working like a charm. Now, I could go and actually do this, and who knows? Maybe we'll find time, and maybe I will. But she is, the Ford Foundation is paying her to make decisions that are a nightmare for the residents of Judea and Samaria. And we're going to talk about what that means, because I wrote a book called Bye Bye Gaza, where I was in Gaza all the way through the evacuation. And I interviewed and I did, well, I saw it and I wrote a book about it. Again, you get that book, Bye Bye Gaza, on lulu.com. That's lulu.com. Write my name in the search box, Chamish. That's how you spell Chamish. Get the cheap book. Don't get it in color. Too expensive. Look, what's coming up is Gaza all over again. Now, here is what's going to happen from this point on. The army, which really we're going to talk about how many enemies are out there and how deadly is their threat to Israel and how very likely they're going to succeed. Israel has got to face up to a threat never, ever. Look, there are 200,000 missiles pointed at Israel. This comes from the head of the IDF intelligence division. His name is Kohavi. It surprised me. It was about 75,000 more than my estimates had given me.
What, and these are the Katyusha-type rockets?
No, they're Grads. They're all kinds of rockets.
Okay.
They can hit anywhere in Israel with full force. They've got warheads. They've got biological and chemical warheads. What are you talking about? No one shot a Grad in the last 10 years.
Okay. I thought you were talking about the small rockets that, like, Hamas would shoot from.
Yeah, 10 but, years ago.
Right, okay.
All that's gone. You don't have these rockets anymore. You have a genuine, look, the Grads cause plenty of trouble. You don't want one landing on your head. And plenty of Israelis died when a Grad somehow found its target. But these are guided missiles. My goodness, you're not talking about a pipe with some explosive in it, and let's see what happens. You're way behind the times if you're talking grads.
No, I wasn't. I was talking Katyusha.
Well, you know, you said grad. Katyusha you can be sure of. Lots and lots of Katyushas. But what you've got is well, you've got Russian missiles. You've got North Korean missiles came through Iran. You've got missiles in Lebanon, Syria, which is allied with Iran. If we'll talk about this business about if Israel attacks Iran's nuclear facilities, that's a joke. The next day, Israel doesn't exist if that happens. You've got in Lebanon a good, well, the figures are 50,000 rockets with Hezbollah. You've got in Syria, the figure is close to 90,000 rockets. In Hamas, you've got another 20 or 30,000. And then you've got Iran. Well, I'm not going to talk about the potential missile throwers like from Egypt and so forth. That's for the near future. But in the present day, Israel's enemies have 200,000 rockets, according to Kochavi, aimed at the country, and they can hit anywhere. The days when little pipes terrorize a little town like Sderot are long gone. The missiles are now hitting Beersheba. They're hitting Rishon LeZion. And the army is going to be wasting its manpower, doing Gaza all over again. The settlers are up for a fight. To them, it may even turn into a fight to the finish. Now, the game is played with an awful, awful lot of infiltrators into the right. The famous one was Shapiro, Rav Shapiro. He was the Gaza infiltrator. He got the youth in Gaza's yeshiva to do everything but defend Gaza. And again, that's in my book, Bye Bye Gaza. Then you have Itamar Ben-Gvir, who broke up the only demonstration to stop the IDF that was run by the women in green, along with a couple of members of the parliament. What's his name? It doesn't matter, Ariel. It doesn't matter. He broke them up. The major infiltrators were Itamar Ben-Gvir, and Ram Shapiro, Rabbi Shapiro. And what you've got is the youth of Gaza follow their rabbi like idiots. And I wrote this up. I was at the rally where the rabbi tells them to go far from Gaza. We're not going into Gaza. We're not going to disturb the soldiers. They would never, ever evacuate 10,000 people, they're Jews. He was a traitor number one. And I've got a lot of information about Rabbi Shapiro. Rabbi Shapiro was a first class pedophile. And they caught him. And there were women in Ma'ariv. There were dozens of them. A good dozen. Without exaggerating, a good dozen who described how Rabbi Shapiro attacked them and touched them and did all kinds of inappropriate behavior. And he was leading the youth of Gaza to fight the IDF. Listen, the odds were thousands to one because Jewish, well, people are very, very stupid. And they're very, very easily led into disaster. And they don't know what a real fight is, and they will not fight for their own welfare. This went on in Europe. It's now happening in Israel. The dumbest people in the world are the settlers. They don't come any dumber. All right, now that's Bye Bye Gaza, where I covered, boy, a couple of infiltrators and these settlers went with their hands in the air. They just surrendered like they would to the Nazis. And that's about to happen again for Migron. You got the settlers considering it an outright outrage, and they're right. You've got the army now wasting its manpower on evacuating them, on using psychological warfare, on playing dirty tricks. And while Israel's enemies are very close to destroying the country, very, very close, the army is wasting its time on Migron. That's the story, in short, of what is going to be happening this summer. And they won't necessarily show up on August 1st. What they did in Gaza is they faked it a lot. There were a lot of demonstrators, so the army would make like they were going in and then turn back. And this happened once, this happened twice. The first time there were 50,000 people, the next time 40,000. Until the day of the evacuation, there was no one there to defend the settlers. And by the way, the settlers didn't prepare for them. They didn't prepare. Well, there was no place for them to even put a tent up. There was no water. There were no supplies. There was nothing for a demonstrator who wanted to save Gaza. Nothing. It was all cleaned out. And again, I'm going to say I like the settlers personally. I love the people of Gaza. They came to hear me speak. In one case, there must have been 700-800 people in the auditorium. I went there week after week trying to tell them. I said, what is going on? I see army jeeps in your settlements. Get them out of there. Block them. Block your homes. Get rid of these soldiers. They're your enemy. They're going to take you out of your homes. That's what they're planning to do. And you're letting them drive free of charge in your settlements? There was no talking to these people. They were cowards. Out there, cowards, and they ended up out of their homes with no compensation. None. It's been years now. They're not resettled. Their children, well, they are not good children. You take children out of a settled home where you had values, and you throw them into really tents, trailers, wherever they could throw them, as cheap as possible. These kids rebelled against their parents, who were cowards. They should have rebelled against themselves. They were just as much to blame as the parents. But they let their homes go down the drain, and they're about to do it again in Migron this summer.
That's a shame. That's a real shame. Well, to give you a little bit more background on how I found out about you is this friend of mine was approached by right-wing rabbis and Jewish settlers who were opposed to a Palestinian state in Judea, Samaria, on biblical grounds. And this organization he was involved with was infiltrated from the start by Avishai Raviv, who was later implicated in the assassination plot. And there was a dirty tricks campaign. And this eventually led to the arrest of my friend. He was thrown in the Russian compound for a couple of weeks and treated very poorly and eventually told to leave. He was an associate of Brit Am and trying to get states Brit Am.
Well, it would be Brit Ham, but what is Brit Ham?
It was trying to get to stimulate interest from stateside people and non-Jewish Zionists to begin populating Judea, Samaria.
Oh, don't be silly. That never had a chance to begin with.
Yeah,
you're talking that he came from there. They probably got rid of him in 2 weeks. He was a troublemaker. Look,
yeah,
I'm talking about something that is homegrown, Israeli-born. These are Israelis. They moved to Judea and Samaria because their government told them to. This was 35 years ago. You've got a situation where some guy comes from the States and really is so outside the real picture. It's amazing he lasted 2 weeks. And I would be amazed if Avishai Raviv spent more than a day there. I'm talking about he was involved with killing Rabin. He set up Yigal Amir. He set up a plot eventually for Paris, but it was Raviv. Raviv went through Carmi Gilon, the head of the Shabak. Carmi Gilon hired a new bodyguard. They fired Rabin's bodyguard that night, the night of the assassination, brought in Reuben and he shot Rabin. This was complicated stuff. What you're talking about is really read my books and dive into the situation. You're talking about a guy who opened his mouth once too much and he was thrown out of the country. I'm talking about Israelis.
Basically. Yeah, that's true. He was trying to.
What was his
help.
Real name? I know he wrote me.
Del Griffin.
Say it again.
Del Griffin.
I know him. Don't take this seriously. I'm talking about a real country about to be really destroyed, and a guy coming from the States with a big mouth, it was a nuisance. At best, it was a nuisance. What you've got going on in Israel is a real country about to be wrecked. Now, look, I'm going to give you an example of this. Now, you may or may not know what the Iron Dome system is. The Iron Dome is, I'm amazed it works. It's an anti-missile battery. The Iron Dome system is it's hitting about 85% of the missiles it can get to, which means
well, that's better than the Patriot system they had back there in 91, which is not
it hit nothing.
Yeah.
That's certainly true. This is and it's a little less. The Patriots were like $2.5 million every time you shot one. I know what I'm talking about. I was in the anti-aircraft division of the Israeli Air Force. I also shot missiles, in one case in the Lebanon War, at real airplanes. I know what I'm talking about. This is a major improvement. But neither here nor there, it still needs 15 seconds to target the missile. And a lot of cities in Israel are 7 seconds away. You hit Ashdod, the missile's there in 7 seconds. It's a problem. But neither here nor there. It costs $100,000 each time you send a missile against a missile. The missiles cost maybe $5,000. It's just a tube with some explosive in it and a nasty warhead. But they do terrible damage. Nonetheless, not the point right now. The point is that they're getting better and better with every operation. Right now, the missiles are falling in Ashdod, in Ashkelon, in Beersheba. The figure is that 1 million Israelis are living in terror from missiles. It's more than that. Beersheba's got to have 250,000 people. Ashdod and Ashkelon together is close to that. You've got yourself, southern Israel is now, everyone there is living under justified terror. Now, we'll go into that very shortly. What you've got to deal with is that the Iron Dome system, this week, by the way, for the first time, was positioned in Tel Aviv. Now, look, what the IDF spokesman said, I'll translate this. The Iron Dome system is in the process of operational reception. That's how they translated Kabbalat Mitzayit. Who knows what operational reception means? All right? You can say it simply. It's being set up. All right? Within the framework of this process, the process being operational reception, the battery is periodically positioned in various locations across the country.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website, with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging, and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Currently, the system is positioned in the greater Tel Aviv area as part of the operational plan. Wow, no scaring Tel Aviv residents with that explanation. What you've got is the next round, or the one after, it doesn't matter, Tel Aviv is going to be hit. Now, you remember there was a war in 2006. Just after I left Israel, and I didn't leave voluntarily. I really just got the hell out of there. I was in and out of the hospital, accidents, strokes, you name it. It was a terrible situation. And I left Israel until there's a government that actually people vote for and represents them. That will never happen, I guess. But after 33 years, I left Israel, and the war broke out. Now, in 2006, never forget this, Israel lost the war. It was a 34-day war against Hezbollah. Hezbollah sent how many missiles into Israel? A good 10,000, if not more, over 34 days. All of northern Israel had a way out, a car, anything. They all left. Northern Israel was empty of people. Hezbollah disrupted Israel's life completely, and they carried on after the war. Israel didn't do a thing to stop Hezbollah, not a thing. Now, what you've got is we've got a lesson what happens when real missiles land. When real missiles land, people are not happy that they landed. Not happy at all. Now, I'm taking information right now from the Jerusalem Post, which I rarely do. But I accept that this is a rational explanation, although names are not dropped, and the Jerusalem Post has not the greatest reputation for trustability. But nonetheless, they had a major, major story. And the IDF is debating whether sporadic rocket fire is enough of a justification to launch an operation against not Lebanon this time. Hezbollah has been very nice. They haven't shot off their missiles. This is Hamas. Now, justification. Not 3 weeks ago, in mid-March, in 4 days, over 300 rockets were shot at southern Israel. 300. Try and imagine, where do you live?
In the United States.
No, I know you live in the States. Where do you live?
Tennessee, central Tennessee.
How would you feel about 300 rockets landing on your town?
Well, there's only about 30,000 people here, so it would be mass chaos.
No, I think you want to push it up to like a Beersheba where you've got a quarter of a million people to make the example. Why is the IDF debating? No country on the face of the earth will take the shutdown. Well, let's talk about what this is doing to the people of southern Israel. As people don't seem to understand what happens. Look, since when I wrote Bye-Bye Gaza, I predicted that as soon as Israel is out of Gaza, you're going to see mortars and rockets like crazy. The Gush Katif settlements were a chokehold on Gaza and prevented outbreaks of violence. Once the Jews left Gaza, well, it was just a matter of time. Out went the PLO, in came Hamas, and, well, there have been about 8,000 rockets landing on Israel since mid-2005, since the pullout. Last year was a quiet year. There were only 680 rocket launches. That's two a day, all of southern Israel. A million residents. Now, I think it's more. I think they're covering this one up. I think it's probably closer to a million and a half. But it's spreading. These residents live in terror, in permanent terror. Well, it dies down for a few weeks, and then it's up again. When you go outside, you could be blown up. When you go to the movie theater, it can be blown up. When you get in your car, it can be blown up. There is no security. And, well, when these rockets start, needless to say, schools are closed, workplaces are closed, parents have to stay home with their kids. This is what, well, as I said, mid-March, that was 3 weeks ago, Israel had 300 rockets, and all of this happened to them. Everyone stayed home. Everyone was terrified to leave their house. They stayed in shelters. A rocket goes through a roof, obviously. You stay in hot, smelly shelters with neighbors you hate. Look, Sderot was the town close to Gaza. In the days when they were shooting off these very primitive weapons, Sderot got it. I'd say of the 8,000 rockets, half landed on Sderot. Now, there's an analysis of the effect of all these rockets on Sderot. 45% of the children under 6 have been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm amazed it's only 45%. All right, but that's what this statistic says. But big deal, because 41% of their mothers and a third of their fathers also suffer from stress disorder. That means these households are very hard to live in. Now, these kind of statistics are now being replicated everywhere in Israel, in Ashdod, in Ashkelon, in Beersheba, throughout the kibbutzim, all through southern Israel. The children are nuts, and so are their parents, quite frankly. What you're getting in Israel, look, no other country would put up with this kind of showing. None. The idea, this was the Jerusalem Post article that made me read it. They're debating whether sporadic rocket fire is enough of a justification to launch an operation. 304 days is sporadic? No country would think.
Gee.
Well, we're making our point slowly. We're now talking this week. We're not talking old news. Now, how did this happen? I mean, really, how did it get to the point that Israelis who used to really stand up for the country, well, they used to. Now they run into shelters and they hide behind iron domes and they don't fight anymore. But you have to remember that it was the Kadima Party under Ariel Sharon, He's the one that pulled the Jews out of Gush Katif, out of Gaza. It was Sharon. It was pure treachery. And I could talk to them because they killed Sharon. Same guys who killed Rabin, the same Yarmouk, the same Shimon Peres, the same gang who killed Rabin. Well, he's not dead. He's waiting for a brain transplant. But he may as well be dead. And you have to look that once the Jews pulled out of Gush Katif and the rockets started, Sharon said the rockets, this is a quote from him, are not that bad. They're okay. Shimon Peres, now Peres is just, I could do a whole 2 hours on Peres. What you've got for a president of Israel despises Jews, despises them. And he is a mass murderer, and the Israeli people, once again, just don't object that a mass murderer, the man who murdered Rabin and Sharon, is their president. You can't make Israelis wake up. You can't do it. And believe me, I tried. I know what I'm talking about. It almost killed me. But what did Shimon Peres accuse the southern Israelis, quote, of stoking hysteria? And then he went on to talk about the rockets. What's the big deal? What you've got is Israel's leadership, who I say again, and you have to get used to it. If you understand my work, you have to understand they're not working for the Jewish people. They're working against them. They're working for outside sources. It's a very nasty situation. Peres is up to his ears with the Vatican. And again, I can talk about that and there is no problem. Sharon was up to his ears with the Council on Foreign Relations. Outsiders are making life in Israel unlivable. The people of Israel got acclimated to the idea that life could be lived with rocket fire, because that's what their leaders told them.
Wow. Yeah. Well, what? You know, there's a lot of people here in the United States that, you know, they're millions of them Christians, love Israel, they want to support Israel, but they've got this Pollyanna-ish idea of what's going on over there. And
well, they're supporting a place that doesn't exist. They've got a fantasy land that somehow fits into their version of biblical prophecy, and it's completely nothing to do with biblical prophecy, what's going on in Israel. What you've got are leaders that truly want to, I'll talk about this coming up since the first show, and I won't be shy. I'll just talk about what's coming up next.
No, absolutely. Let us know, because this is, you know, I've always been a muckraker and an iconoclast, and I want people to know the truth about what's going on and, you know, how they can concentrate their efforts, or whether it be
you mean to say
just
that you
prayer,
made rucksacks?
No.
You were a ruckmaker.
Ruckmaker. No, a muckraker. That's someone who, that's an old word.
I know what it is. Okay.
Okay.
Now.
Because you're one of them too.
No, I'm not. I just report the facts and very dryly. It's
right, okay.
Look, my book, don't kid yourself about this. No one has criticized, I mean, no one has provided an actual criticism with mistakes. My book stands the test, all my books, they stand the test of time. I'm very, very careful in my sources and in my quotes. And I knew when I was in Israel, I was the only one people could turn to. What a series of interviews I did for my books from people who were terrified, not always giving their names. But they sought me out and well, look, let's go backwards to today before we go into that scene. As I say, I've got a lot of books. Bye Bye Gaza is very relevant to what's coming up in Migron. If you read that, you'll find out what the IDF is about to do. Now, I'm going to tell you about Tamar Yonah. Well, I've got this memorized, or it came back to me. Tamar Yonah runs a show on Israel National Radio. Now, I like her a lot. We've been friends for the longest time. In fact, we were friends with Rabbi Marvin Antleman. Oh, I don't want to do that now. But he was one of the people who saw that the Israeli government was taken over. I'll talk about Rabbi Antleman in some further show, I guess. But the important point with Tamar Yonah is it's a popular radio show. And she was on my show. I had a nasty year, I want everyone to know. A very nasty year. In January, I had a quintuple bypass.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
Oh, I send you my stuff. All right.
Well, I may have forgotten.
No, it's not the kind of thing. My readers were very supportive of me. And it wasn't all bad. And they said, I'm going to live another 30 years, and they caught it just before a major cardiac. And it's a long story. But during that time, I've got this radio show on First Amendment Radio, and it turns out I'm the most popular host, and I didn't want to give it up, but I couldn't talk in those days. I mean, I have this congestive heart disease that I ended up back in the emergency room. I had liquid on my lungs. I couldn't get a word out. So I got guest hosts. Some were good, some were terrible. But for about a month and a half, I couldn't do a show on my own. I couldn't speak. So I had a guest host who invited Tamar on. I've been on her show many times, and she phoned me in the hospital. She's a good friend. Now, Tamar, my guest host, by the way, I couldn't get her to direct one question to Tamar, so I took over the show. Now, Tamar was a wonderful interview until she started bragging about her son. Her son, she says, is a major in the IDF, and she's so proud of her officer's son. And I said to her, "Are you nuts? Are you nuts? You're holding that as a badge of honor? You should be ashamed of yourself. What you got," she bragged, "that she could see me grunt from her kitchen window." And I said, "Your son's army is going to pull these people out of their homes in the middle of the night, your neighbors." I said, "You got to be out of your mind to brag about that. It's a disgrace he's in the army." And I said, "Look, if she bragged that the Sepers have the highest proportion of officers in the IDF," and I said, "Well, the Sepers are nuts because they are pulling themselves out of their own homes."
Wow.
Well, that's exactly what's going on. It's a disgrace to be in the IDF today, an utter disgrace. Now, what you've got, and I'm saying that, my daughter is in the IDF, and I'm very proud of her, but she's not an officer, and she won't direct anybody. And if she is told to get involved in this Migron evacuation, I hope she'll be brave and just tell them to go suck rocks. In the name of an evacuation, if you're an officer in the IDF and you're from the settlements, you tell them, "I will not accept or obey any orders from the IDF until this evacuation business starts." That's it. And there's no other policy that will work to save their homes.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated and freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now.
Put it under your bed. Put it in your closet. Give it for Christmas to people and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
And to save their lives. And I told you this over and over again. If you support the IDF, you're supporting the day when they will come to your door and your son will evacuate you from your home, your home. He may not be there in person, but he'll be there. And until this is understood, and believe me, I hit her hard with this, and she didn't seem to understand it. She said, whenever there's a crisis, my son is ready to handle. I said, well, there's a crisis. They're about to evacuate Migron, which you can see through your kitchen window, and your son is going to be throwing your neighbors out of their house, out of their homes. That's the crisis. The Jews can't understand this. It's an utter disgrace to be in the IDF as long as these evacuations take place. An utter, complete disgrace. And I'm saying that as an IDF soldier who fought in a very serious war for the IDF when the IDF represented the Jewish people. They no longer do.
What a shame.
Well, all of this is a shame. And it only gets worse. Now, we've done 1 hour. Do I get a break?
Sure. But I won't edit anything.
Funny you mentioned Del Griffin. He used to write me all the time. And he... this was many years ago, but when I say this to you, he was a nice guy, and I corresponded with him for the longest time. Believe me, he was no threat. All right, I'm putting this mildly.
He was trying to approach things from a prophetic angle.
It didn't work. It didn't work with the government. It didn't work with his neighbors. But neither here nor there, you brought up a name I hadn't thought about in a good 5 years.
Well, it was the day after he had a meeting with Yair Davidi.
Yair Davidi? Who is Yair Davidi?
He
never heard
of him. He's Brecham.
Yair Davidi?
He's a guy. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Who is he?
And he's the titular head of Brit Hall.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my God. I know Brit Hall, but they're nuts. They're the Anglo-Saxon, they're the English Jews organ. I know who Davidi is. He's a nutcase. They're the English. They're the ones that think that Israel is England and England is Israel. Oh, my goodness.
Well, no.
I know exactly who they are.
No, I know you do. We're talking about descendants of the Northern Kingdom that went out into,
right,
into
it's
the
long
world.
Disappeared, and he says they went to England. No, this is just nutty stuff you're talking about. I'm glad we've recorded this, though. I had heard of Brigham, And this guy is always attacking me, but he's minor. It doesn't matter what he says. He's got about two people reading him. All right.
Well, what happened is Dell got arrested and thrown in the Russian compound for a couple of weeks. And when he had been working at the Jerusalem Post, and when he was being interrogated, they didn't just have a file on him. They had a file cabinet on everything that he'd ever written. And, you know, he'd been followed and shadowed.
And you're saying that's because of Davidi?
No, just because of the things that he was involved with. He got involved with some real right-wing, you know, folks in the Shas party and I can't remember the name of the organization, but they were trying to respond to terrorist attacks by getting to what was going on, try to beat the police and the IDF there. You know, he
Shas
just did a lot of crazy
that.
Stuff.
Shas never and, had activists.
No, I'm not saying that, but he was involved with another organization. Who was that rabbi that was murdered years and years ago? And he was a follower of his followers, and but he was involved in a lot of recent stuff.
No, he wasn't. We'll start up. He was involved with stuff that would get anybody thrown out of the country.
Well, he got involved. He knew Rabbi Andelman because. Rabbi Andelman had analyzed a sample of incense that was found in the cave that Dell discovered by accident because he was there covering the dig for the Post, and he went up on a mesa and he happened to look down and saw something that caught his interest, and he felt a little bit of cool breeze coming out of a hole, and anyway, the hole was later excavated, and that's where they found Jones found the temple.
Let's forget this topic. I know all these people. Wendell Jones was serious, by the way, and I think he was a very, very nice man, so don't get me wrong, but what you're talking about is Breed Ha'am. You're talking about, fringe is not the word. I hope this is recorded. This is actually good stuff to know. This isn't fringe. This is if you don't have a citizenship, we're going to throw you out of here for this.
Right.
He would not be. They don't throw a lot of people out, but what you're describing is just cruising for a Bruce, and that's all. Now let me have a few minutes just to get my throat. This was a good thing to understand. I had forgotten about Breed Ha'am. I know these things exist, but they're of no consequence.
Sure. Go ahead. Go ahead and
all right, let me plug my website. Last thing I do. Do you want to just stay on the line? My website is BarryChamish.com. That's Barry and Chamish is CHAMISH.com. My books are at Lulu, www.lulu.com. Write in my name in the search box, CHAMISH, and get the cheap ones, don't get the color ones. Good. I get 7 minutes to clear my throat?
You bet.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Oh,
I'm
good.
Back.
Yeah, as that last stuff, keep in there. You remind me of things that, I haven't thought about in a whole long time.
Well, the other thing I'm involved with, the Noahides. And,
that was Bendel. Bendel was a serious guy.
See, what happened is I had a earlier incarnation of this radio show back between 2003 and 2008. And I got involved. Well, I found out about the renewed Sanhedrin.
Antelman. He was on the renewed. Right.
Right. Got in touch with Michael Baron, interviewed him, and then I interviewed Dell several times. And because, you know, Dell was basically from the same area and kind of the same area of the country and had a. We had a lot of, we had similar friends. My mother was from Vicksburg, and Dell worked there. And we hit it off and worked closely for a while. And I found out that, there was a rub between Dell and and you know, Rabbi Bar-On, and but because they were both involved with Yisrael Schneider, and you know, then, so I found myself
either.
Caught up in. Yeah, he's seat number 21 on the Sanhedrin.
Oh, okay. I went to a few of their meetings to sell books.
And I don't know what's going on there, but even you know, Mikhail Bar-On has distanced himself from. So you know, I got caught up in all this stuff. And
well, get caught up in what's really happening.
Yeah,
all
right, we're trying to.
You can roll, and I'll be.
We're rolling. I'll just edit out your verb.
What you described. Now I want to make it clear. You know, Rabbi, stupid me, Vendel, not Rabbi Jones, Vendel.
Right.
I stayed with him for 2 weeks while I gave lectures in the Dallas area. He was a marvelous host. I know his daughter. She bought books from me. She is a.
Was that 2005?
Yeah. I'd say 2005. She is a genuine converted Jew. She's a true blue settler, lives in Jericho. She's a real thing. We got along just fine. Vendel and his wife and I all got along during that time. There is an issue, and it's a complicated one.
Well, let me ask a quick question. Were you there when during Katrina, Hurricane Katrina?
I was in Israel. That's when Gush Katif was. Look, I wrote the shortest thing I ever wrote. I had this. I don't know where it came from. I wrote this article, and then this is Gush Katif is right now being evacuated, and oh my goodness. Katif is K-A-T-I-F. Katrina is K-A-T-R-I-N-A. I said, take away the cat. And the message is, if you evacuate Gush Katif, you're going to see rain. And needless to say, I sent that out before there was any rain in New Orleans from Katrina. I don't know where that came from. I've never sent a two-line message, but a lot of people actually got it. Yeah, I was in Israel in 2005. I was in Gaza. Wow, I was there 2 days before the pullout. Talking to rabbis, talking about the betrayal, talking about Rav Shapira and what he was doing to the youth. I was speaking there. I was preparing my book there. Yeah, I was there in 2005. Why are you asking, by the way?
Oh, just curious because Rabbi Bar-On was there in 2005.
Look, I don't
just
know
curious.
Him, but I do know Rabbi Antleman. Rabbi Antleman and I were on the phone. He phoned me, by the way. He wanted advice from me. Now, look, you have to understand, I didn't believe Rabbi Antleman's to eliminate the opiate for a long time. I could not conceive that Judaism was infiltrated in the 17th century by someone named Shabtai Tzvi, who created a false Judaism, well, what is called Sabbateanism.
Look, that's right.
I'm going to plug myself again. If you don't read this stuff, you don't know where I'm coming from. I wrote a book, and it's considered one of my better ones, my best, actually, Shabtai Tzvi, Labor Zionism, and the Holocaust. Now, this title is telling the truth of what was done to Jews by labor Zionists. Shabtai Tzvi was an anti-Jewish Jew. He said everything in the Torah was right in the opposite sense. In other words, I always use this example. There are plenty of them. But do not kill becomes do kill. And that's a mitzvah. The Holocaust was a burnt offering. That is Rabbi Antleman's concept. that you had this Sabbataneism, it transferred itself to labor Zionism. And it led to the Holocaust to get in Israel. It's a very ugly and scary story. Now,
well, you know, listeners out there, you know, you need to understand, if you're not familiar, that there are large movements within Judaism that don't even believe that Jews should even be in Israel at this point. So you've got a lot of
you don't have
things going on. And
you've got left-wingers. These are Sabbateans.
Yeah.
You can call them large groups if you want. All right. Call them large groups. These are, they don't even know they're being affected by the Sabbateanism. The Jewish left is a real problem for Jews. Real problem. Rabbi Antelman explained the story to me. I couldn't accept it. It was too, you know, there are some things that are too radical, even for a guy like me. The day that I accepted it was the day I woke up. There was a Sabbateanism. Labor Zionism, the founders of Israel, the Ben-Gurions, well, the, needless to say, the Peres, the Rabins, the Golda Meirs, they're all from this Sabbateanism. And what Rabbi Antelman did was prove, now look, this is a separate subject that I may go into. Today I wasn't planning on it, but Turkey was the home for Sabbateanism. Shabtai Tzvi claimed he was the Messiah of the Jews on June 18th of 1666.
Right.
Big day in Jewish history. Shabtai Tzvi claims he's the Messiah. The problem is that Sabbateanism spread, all the books say this, and I always quote this, from Iran to Mexico, the Jews sold their belongings, a penny on the dollar. They climbed to mountains. They stripped naked and expected to be transported into the new Jerusalem with Shabtai Tzvi. Half the Jews of the world.
That's right.
All right, I see we have.
That's what I read. Yeah, I've done a little bit of reading on this subject, and it's really concerned me because, you know, I wonder about, you know, how many Jews, particularly American Jews, you know, buy into this.
Are you joking? Look, you have to understand.
But the political leaders of Israel are
know
that
bought well. Into look
this.
Again. Oh my goodness, great! If we have to do this, it's a long, complicated talk. Put it this way.
Well, we can make it another show if you want to. I'd like to have you on at least once a month.
Once a month? I do once a week if you want.
Hey, let's do once
you
a week.
You want to do a subject once a week?
Sure.
I'll do Antelman. Look, this is a very serious subject. The Jews have been infiltrated. Their people have been infiltrated. Now, Judaism is very complicated. There are all kinds of movements. I don't care who a Jew is or what movement he belongs to. I don't give a damn, quite frankly. But nonetheless, there are all kinds of rivalries between the Haredim and the nationalists. And without diving into it, the left are who controls Israel. Now, not who controls elections anymore. There hasn't been a leftist who won an election since 1974. Golda Meir was the last one. The Israeli people reject Sabbateanism totally, completely. And by the way, they know it's a Sabbateanism or Frankism. There are plenty of the old-timers who know exactly what I'm talking about. The problem is I gave lectures in Hebrew. I gave many lectures on Rabin, hundreds of them. Shabtai Tzvi was just so difficult to explain. It took me 20 years to believe Rabbi Antelman. These people were not going to get the idea in one night.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries. Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Well, is it true that Zvi, I was reading that he actually
converted
to Islam?
Well, that's the whole point.
Islam.
He was forced to. Now, remember,
right.
The Turks got sick. He was in Gaza. And by the way, that's significant. I'm not going to dive into that either. You'll find that the amount of knowledge over time is getting to my little brain, who just can't take it anymore. Gaza was the headquarters of Shapitsky. The Gaza operation, I'm not saying it was directly connected, but it wasn't irrelevant. What Shapitsky did was create a court that really ticked off the Sultan of the Ottoman Sultan, and he gave him a choice. He put a knife under his throat, told him, you convert or you die. So Shapitsky became Muslim. He was a coward. And by the way, I would not necessarily want that sword going through my throat either. I'm not sure I'm a coward. I've been in situations where more or less I'm not a coward, but put a knife under my throat and you'll see me saying, sure, I'll be a Muslim. What the hell?
Well, I kind of refer to myself as a thinking paranoid, so maybe you're...
Well, the situation was very straightforward. You convert or you die. And he did convert.
Yeah, right. So.
And most Jews abandoned him worldwide. They realized they'd been victims of a massive hoax, but not all Jews. There was a...
And this is amazing that there could be a worldwide movement In the 17th
century. Well, that's the Vatican.
How does that
happen?
Don't
want to dive into that. Only the Vatican has the agents and the power and the people. On another show, we'll talk about that. There is no question that Shapitsky was guided by the Vatican. You could not have spread that movement so quickly worldwide without... There was one organization with agencies in countries around the world. That was the Vatican. There was nothing else. There was no Methodist church, okay? You had the Vatican or nothing. So clearly, he had help. But the real point is that one group did not abandon Shapitsky. That was the Donma cult in Turkey. And they really took to him. I mean, they said that he converted because it was a message that we should all convert to whatever religion is in our state, but secretly will be Sabbateans. Now, this dogma, I've got all kinds of personal and not personal recollections. There are only 50,000 Jews in Turkey. I talked to a Turkish woman who said, we're very grateful you've given us a very free society. I said, come on, there's only 50,000 Jews. She said, nah, there's a couple of million, and we know who they are. and she's absolutely right. And I could dive into who was a Sabbatean and who gave it out. The fact of the matter is Turkey has got Jews who claim they're Muslims. They don't claim they're Jews on weekends or wherever they gather. They claim they're Sabbateans. Now, what labor Zionism did is they went to Turkey. Ben Gurion went to Turkey. I'm not going through this. This I'm going to read on and do well. The fact of the matter is the Donma are very powerful in Turkey under the surface. What you've got with Rabbi Antelman, let's go backwards. His book was called To Eliminate the Opiate. Look on the internet, you might find it. The fact is I didn't believe it. The man was talking to me it was usually a Thursday night. He caught up on the news. I was real buddies with Rabbi Marvin Antelman, and I liked the guy. I mean, and I liked his family. I never met his son, but he had three gorgeous daughters who I became friends with all of them. The point is, I believed it after a while, but it's not something, and I'm tough. I don't buy silly, between us, I don't buy prophecies. I buy facts, and the fact of the matter is there's something wrong with Judaism, and the only person on the face of the earth I knew who was trying to get to the bottom of it was Rabbi Marvin Antelman. There, I said it. That's the highest praise I can give the guy.
Yeah, I'm at crashrecovery.org/Antelman, and apparently it's a digest of To Eliminate
one
the
and
Opiate,
two,
Volume
yes.
1, Volume 2.
Now, look, it's not easy reading, but he had an amazing influence on me. Well, I had an amazing influence on him. We were very good. Look, in my writing career, Rabbi Antelman took a liking to me, and I took a liking to him. And I met with his family, and we took a liking to each other. Two daughters I met, one was married and living in Honduras or Costa Rica. The point is I met his family. It was more than just talking on the phone about Sabbateanism and him listening to my interpretation of events. We became buddies. My other buddy at that time was Joel Bainerman. I'm not sure if you know who he is. Joel Bainerman wrote the first book on the Bush family. It was called Crimes of the President. It came out the same year my first, I wouldn't call it anti-Israel, it was Reform Israel book. It was called The Fall of Israel. It came out in England the same time that his book, Crimes of the President, came out in the United States. This was before Oslo. And throughout Israel, we were co-editors of something called Inside Israel. We were the only ones digging into what the hell was going on. No one else was there. But in Hebrew, it's a different story. We got our sources from a real free press that existed in Israel before Oslo. It no longer exists in Israel. Straightforward. Boy, I could dive into the stories we exposed. But Joel Bainerman, look him up. B-A-I-N-E-R-M-A-N, that's Bainerman. We were partners, during the end of Israel. Basically, the end of Israel. That was the Oslo Accord.
Yeah, well, I'm reading this blurb about this book, and I'm going to have to get into it. Sounds like I'm finally going to get I've been wanting a good education on who did what and with what.
My Lord, go on to lulu.com.
My problem is my wife and I are living on one fixed income, and I just haven't had any money.
Well, you think to eliminate the opiates any cheaper than my books? Listen, what you've got is a different world out there. What they've been handing you is a bunch of baloney. Now, the real problem with Antelman, he was way ahead of his time. And I don't dare, it's amazing I'm mentioning him this show. I was just going to talk about events that are happening now. Somehow your references got me to them, okay?
Well, and then I'm wondering, maybe on another show, you know, we could talk about Soros.
Nah, that's a separate subject. That's a Jewish traitor.
Okay.
That's just okay. An outright Jew who is putting his money into everything that can destroy Israel. I don't want to do that. I'll mention that. I'm not the expert in that, but I know a little bit. I'm talking about the Jews destroying Israel. That's what I'm the expert at. And let me tell you, when I moved to Israel, I didn't have a clue. Not a clue. It was just when Oslo changed everything. It was the end of the Israel I knew. They brought the PLO back. They armed them to the teeth. We were suddenly at war with our worst enemy. That's when I started listening to Rabbi Antelman. That's when Joel and I went into first gear. It's when our government sold the country out. And by the way, the sale will be final. There won't be an Israel very shortly. But I'm going to tell you what's preventing that. Let's go back to where we began, and I don't know how we got so far off that. Mind you, it's useful. It's good for the future. Now, let's go this week. Now, what's going on is, look, this crap about Israel attacking Iran, any Israel that attacks Iran has got to be prepared. That day, it's got a missile war on its own territory and a butte, one that will Well, listen, 200,000 missiles are aimed at Israel. Get rid of 50,000 of them in one day. You see what 50,000 missiles on an area, my goodness, of Connecticut does. Now, what you're talking about is Israel attacking Iran. You know, I've dismissed this because it's not, look, the Israeli military leadership have very, very few ways out. Very few. We'll talk about, I think I know what they're planning, and this is going to be very spooky, I think, for the show, but I'm going to mention it. But
well, I've heard they've canceled all leaves, you know, during Passover, and I mean, there's saber rattling at least going on right now.
It's more than saber rattling.
And Obama's...
Is the Americans. I'm going to say this. The Americans leaked. Look, this is from the Israeli press and media, and I don't trust it as a rule, but there have been enough reporters out there. It started with Ynet, and then I went down the line, and I said, okay, this is crossing this. I'm going to take this seriously. As the Azerbaijan Republic is a very corrupt place, okay? Really, if you're into crime, that republic is the best. Apparently, Israel bought 4 air bases on Iran's northern border in the Azerbaijan Republic. Without diving into it, if this interests you, you dive into it. The fact is, if you've got a military operation and you've got 4 air bases, and, well, it's a heck of a difference between refueling in mid-flight and flying back to Israel, which is possible, but it's risky, hugely risky, and having an air base 350 miles from the nuclear facilities. This was supposedly Israel's big secret. We can bomb the nuclear facilities. Now, frankly, what I've been reading is saying that's not enough, that you've got facilities deep, deep, deep inside mountains. You'll need an infantry attack. The Air Force can do so much. Bunker buses can do so much. It won't work. That's the way I've been reading it. But nonetheless, a lot of damage can be caused by having an air 4 air bases in Azerbaijan. the Obama administration, according to, I'm going to say this again, every Israeli source said, and believe me when I tell you that I don't use rumors. Rumors cause trouble. It's very hard to dismiss them. I'm telling you the sources were good, that America leaked that Israel has bought the Azerbaijan Republic and has an ability to strike Iran. All right?
Now you say you felt that they
bought the entire Republic. What's the big deal?
Really?
You give a few leaders a couple billion dollars, you think that's, listen, mafia is mafia. They deal with money. If you hand over big money, you get an air.
Right.
Well, it's not around. It's out there everywhere.
Well, I heard about the air bases, but yeah, see, that's why I'm talking to you. So, you know, if I'm going wild and acting like a, you know, I'm not
well,
fully briefed,
fully
you know, because I'm
that
not fully
somebody
briefed and we want
to
know.
Is trying to trip up. Look, again, I'm going to say this. Israel's options stink. And we'll go into what I think. I mean, I have reduced, how do I put this? When you've got no options, you get desperate, all right? Now, look, the American administration, I don't care who they are. I don't give a damn if it's Obama or Bush. If it's Bush older or younger or Clinton or Carter, they've all been anti-Israel, starting with Reagan. It's a long story. It doesn't matter who runs America. But in 1985, Shimon Peres did something very stupid that really ticked off America. Now, this is called the Pollard spy scandal. There was someone named Jonathan Pollard. Listen, he was a clerk. He had no access to anything. But it was a Robert oh, my goodness gracious. What's wrong with my memory? You excuse me. I went through surgery. Robert McLaren, he needed someone within the Reagan administration. Robert, come on, help me out.
I couldn't because I'm not familiar with it.
I'm
okay.
Ashamed
That's
of
all
myself.
Right.
I knew this stuff backwards. Doesn't matter. He ended up in an insane asylum, and they took care of him. Pollard was a nothing. He agreed to send material to the Israeli government. The prime minister then was Shimon Peres. The good stuff came to Robert I feel foolish.
Oh, it's okay.
It's a whole story.
Well, you know,
the point is that Shimon Peres took the best of the stuff. He found the info, the data, right from the U.S. Navy intelligence service that there was an operation to free hostages in Beirut by, again, giving them arms, giving the bad guys who kidnapped them arms. It was called Arms for Hostages. It later became called Arms for Hostages. Peres took advantage of this knowledge, and instead of saying, oh, Lord, we got to stop the Americans, they are ruining our future. They're killing our people. He said, what a great idea. Let's expand it. This became known as Iran-Contra.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for $1. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond. Put it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
Now, I can go through how Israelis sucked in the butts. Not Reagan. Reagan was, by then, almost shot dead. Bush had taken over. It's a complicated story. Bush met someone named Amiram near in the King David Hotel in Jerusalem, and they discussed the arms for hostages fiasco, and Amiram near warned him that we're dealing with radical elements, and it's unsafe, and Amiram near perishes. Eventually perishes,
And this is back when Bush 1 was the CIA.
He was vice president. What are you talking about? This was 10 years after that.
Reagan Bush. Okay, I got it.
And let me get back to where. In short, Amiram Neer was supposed to testify before the Congressional Committee on Iran-Contra. He had an accident in Mexico. This was Perez's ally in Iran-Contra. He was the only one killed in a small plane crash in Mexico. The point being that after the Bush administration barely escaped, but call it Reagan. Reagan was not active. He was a figurehead. The man was not the administration Bush was. The Bush dynasty survived by the skin of its teeth over the arms for hostages crisis called Iran-Contra. It was all done by Shimon Peres. The whole thing. And after they escaped with, again, by the skin of their teeth, it was really close. A lot of people went to jail. Israel refused to send Paul's helpers, Abiyam Sela and Rafi Khan, who actually sits in the Knesset today. It's all mafia. Running Israel is the mafia, but I got news for you guys. Running America is the mafia. This was one blackmail against America by Israel. It goes deeper than what I'm telling you. But Iran-Contra was Israel, Shimon Peres, taking Jonathan Pollard's information and blackmailing George Walker Bush. Eventually, that turned into Oliver North and Amiram Neer.
Yeah.
And eventually, that became Iran-Contra.
And down to this day, you know, because of all that, you've got the rumors.
You don't have that whatsoever.
And, you know, it isn't... And you've got the U.S. Army or the National Guard.
You don't have that from Iran-Contra. Don't mix them up.
Yeah.
They're not connected to Iran-Contra.
This is what's being reported.
Oliver North was chosen to go fly to Tehran with Amiram Neer. You have to understand what Iran-Contra was. It was complicated. Very complicated. What you have is Iran at war with Iraq. They needed arms. They were short of arms. Israel agreed to supply them arms with Hebrew writing on it. defective, but nonetheless, Israel agreed to supply them with the arms they needed if they released the hostages. Those hostages were released the day of Reagan's inauguration to pay for, listen, you had this money from Iran. It went to the Contras. What happened is the money was laundered by Banca Polim in Miami, and then was shipped to the Contras, who bought arms of their own and shipped heroin and God knows what else, and they defeated the ruling government of Nicaragua. This is called Iran-Contra. It's a very messy story, and it has nothing to do with FEMA camps. It has a lot to do with deceit. It has a ton to do with Israeli's government becoming too mafia for the Bush administration, and a decision. The last thing Bush did almost on September 17th of 1993, before Clinton took over, he met Rabin in Kennebunkport, Maine. And this was 92, I take it back, September 17th, 1992, and he told them, you're going to deal with the PLO, and you're going to give them a state within Israel's borders. That's what you're going to do. You're going to bring back the PLO. Now, to go and dive into who Rabin was and why he agreed to this and what happened afterwards, the point is, in November of 1992, two Israelis, Hirschfeld and Pundak, I'm not going to go through all of Oslo and how that deception was foisted on Israel, but without Iran-Contra, the Bushes wouldn't have been so furious in Israel that they devised a plan to break the country apart once and for all and for good. The way was called Oslo Peace. Rabin started it, and he died because he opposed it. He saw it was a trap. Peres killed him so he could continue to bring Israel to its end. He is now the president of Israel. The whole thing is, and by the way, I have done 0.01% of all the lying that went behind Israel's end. Israel has not got a long time to live. Now, I'll go into that if you want to hear the worst of it. Well, we all want to hear the worst of it, don't we?
Well, we want
well, the truth again, I've skipped facts that will bore your listeners who have never heard me before. I've been very, you know, I do shows with Dr. Stan twice a week, let's say. I'm very different with him. I assume his listeners know what I'm talking about. Yours don't. What you've got right now in Israel is a military. Imagine you're on the board. Now, remember, the board of the IDF, that means, let's say colonel all the way to major general. It's the very top few of the IDF. Right. You don't have sappers.
Right.
Again, this is what I told Tamar Yonah. You don't have any sappers on the general staff of the IDF. They get stopped at captain or major. Later on, again, you can use the word septian Jews or leftists. They're interchangeable. That's what you have at the top of the IDF. Now, they've got a situation, and here's what it is, and you try and sort this out. They must have one heck of a threat out there, or these 200,000 missiles. There would be an excuse, there would be a war, and it would put an end to Israel once and for all. Now, Israel would do some damage, but with all its airfields, well, let's just put it this way. If you have 50,000 missiles, let's say 10,000 of them landing on your airfields, you're not going to have a plane take off. These are guided missiles.
Well, let me interject something. I know you're probably not going to believe this, But just let me say this. Back in the early 1980s, I was a military officer in the Oregon's National Guard Reserve. And I read a book, and this is relating to prophecy, and I know you're not a student of prophecy, but it was called Nostradamus Predicts the End of the World, and even the book title was a misnomer. But the author in that of that book said that that Nostradamus had predicted that that there would be a great power. He called it Hesperia at that time, which became America. He said they would eventually become allies with the Russians, and this would cause an imbalance of power in the world. And he said that the poor, persecuted daughters of Babylon, referring to the Jews, would have their wings clipped. And this would be somewhere around the time when Islam would invade Europe. And this would be during a period of time when a man named Albert would be on the throne in Monaco. So, you know, I started telling my friends in the guard, you know, the wall's coming down. We're going to become allies with Russia. And, you know,
well,
6 years later, it happened.
I don't know why you want allies all the time. Russia is meant to be your ally. Listen, this is going off, and look, what we're talking about
is dead serious.
What we're talking about
would destroy.
You can factually prove that I'm not wrong. All right, there's no guesswork involved here. What you've got right now, let's go back to the general staff. Let's go back to the war. The head of military intelligence, his name is Aviv Kochavi, made a remarkable statement not a month ago. It was in Herzliya. He said that Israel's enemies, and we're not talking Egypt, which supposedly is not an enemy, or Jordan, which is supposedly an ally. We're just talking the bad guys. Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, for now, no. Gaza have got 200,000 missiles pointed at the country. If you're the general staff, you know, unless you threaten back and it scares the other side, scares the willies out of them, you don't exist for long. Now, look, the only thing I can think of, remember, Israel, let's say Israel survives. Let's say it survives the war. Is this a place you want to live? I mean, is this really what you want? Is this worth defending? You've got, again, some sort of threat that is preventing the war from breaking out right now. Something out there. And I've worked this out. And now I'm going to tell you I am guessing. And Prince Albert of Monaco has nothing to do with it. You've got a situation where the only way Israel could survive. You cannot. You know, I get these people, a lot of them Christians. Let's nuke Damascus like it says in the Bible. You nuke Damascus, you may as well nuke yourself.
Yeah.
Damascus is 10 miles from the Golan Heights and 20 from the Galilee. You nuke Damascus, you just nuke the whole Upper Galilee. It's the silliest and stupidest thing I've ever heard, nuking Damascus. Then you nuke Beirut. Fine, you'll get, depending on where the wind is going, you'll finish off Haifa, not to mention nuking Gaza. We don't even want to talk about that. We don't want to talk about the West Bank. The only time that this threat could be used is if Israel has no other options. And I believe this. Now, I'm guessing, but they've got to have a kamikaze secret out there that if we go down, you go down with us. We'll explode the whole nuclear arsenal, our 500 nukes. We'll take you all down with us. Otherwise, Israel would have been toast by now.
like Samson.
No, it's like
pull down the temple around
Netanyahu saying there's no more hope, but we're not going to go down like with the Nazis. We're not going to be the only one.
Yeah. Well, that's the rumor that if there was a nuclear war and it looked like, you know, our capital was going to be destroyed, that the United States would is already targeted. This is just a rumor I've heard. Targeted every capital in the world.
No, you're not.
To bring them down so that we're all equally in
the Stone Age. The intensity in Israel is so much higher than the likelihood of Washington getting nuked. I mean, we're looking at something Israel could not exist.
Yeah.
And listen, when I talk about Israel not existing, you think that's a joke? My son, my daughter, my sister, my nephew, my niece, my family, my friends, they're all in Israel.
And we're talking about a country the size of Maryland.
What does that mean? Well, we know it's a small country.
A very small
but
country.
But again, back to what we said. The only way I see out of this, now let's say that, again, Azerbaijan Republic, and let's say the jets are ready, and I assume Iran is very ready now that this leak is out worldwide. I assume that these planes are going to fly into a halo of resistance, but neither here nor there. What I have been saying is that Israel can never attack Iran. It will be the end of Israel. That's what I've been saying. Well, I've been saying it for 5-6 years. Nukes or no nukes, the danger to Israel prevents them going into Gaza. You can launch 304 days at southern Israel, and Israel won't react. If they do react, at some point, it may not be tomorrow, the Arabs have patience, but if there are 200,000 missiles aimed all over Israel, the country can't survive that. And again, I'm going to repeat what I said. The only way is there's a threat out there. We go, you go. It's kamikaze time. That's what I think is going on in the deep background of the Middle East right now. There's a lot more, but I summarized it.
Yeah, I think you got it right, because that's kind of what I figured what was going on over there, and the two sides are, you know, always jousting with each other, you know, publicly, but, you know, behind the scenes, you know, Israel's got nukes, they're a little country, Iran's a bigger country.
Power-wise,
and they hate each
nukes.
Other.
Now, I'm going to say it again.
But,
Gaza should have been attacked to put an end to the rockets. And Gaza is not attacked, quite simply, because something is going on. It's beyond the world condemning Israel. Israel has to get used to living under a rain shower, of the most sophisticated missiles. They haven't begun to take out the real good stuff. And I'm going to say something. You can put dirty nukes into a warhead. You can make Tel Aviv uninhabitable. There are all kinds of threats out there. Israel has them. The other side has them. So far, this is preventing another Holocaust. That's what it's preventing. And if you think I'm saying this lightly, I'm going to say it again. It's not lightly. I lived there for 33 years, and my family still do live there. They will all be victimized. I'm worried sick about this.
Well, I saw an article, I think of the Jerusalem Post a few months ago, that talked about how naive the Christians were, because they said, from the Jewish viewpoint, you know, we look at your prophecies as if, you want your Jesus to come, but first you got to destroy Israel first. And, you know, Christians think they love Israel, but, you know, it's
well, we don't,
they don't understand the Jewish viewpoint, and that's one of the reasons why
I'm
doing.
Now, I'm going to say it again, it's complicated. And it involves Antlemin, and it involves all kinds of stuff that your listeners have probably never heard before. But I think we did a good job today. Look, if you want my books, they're at lulu.com. That's www.lulu.com. You'll see a search box right in my name, Chamish. And my website is barrychamish.com.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the fountain of youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. And his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction, and importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress. And we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. More enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes. So you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all... are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn or a very young child.
Back to the oxidative stress levels of a child? It sounds too good to be true. Will Protandim work on me?
The scientific evidence is there. The pieces seem to make sense. The question is, does this translate into something that humans can take advantage of?
And so, ancient Eastern healing and modern Western medicine may soon be working together. High oxidative stress is associated with more than aging. It's been linked to hundreds of illnesses.
It's at the very center of many diseases. Liver disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma. I've studied all of these. Strokes, heart attacks.
Even mental disease.
Yes.
Depression?
Alzheimer's disease, depression.
Dr. James Crapo with the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver is also researching Protandim for the company.
Are you saying that this could be a cure-all?
You're looking at something will have a small impact, but an important impact.
We make no claims about curing any disease or preventing any disease. We hope that when enough studies are done, perhaps such claims might be able to be made in the future.
Clinical studies to assess Protandim in both diabetes and heart disease should start in 3 to 4 months. But what about my progress? After nearly 2 weeks now, it's time to get my results. Dr. McCord calculates the numbers. The result? My level of oxidative stress has declined dramatically.
45%. That's excellent.
Just look at where I fall on the graph. Before and after.
Which, if extrapolated back, is the level you would see in a newborn baby.
Have we turned back the clock? Well, maybe not on the outside, but deep inside, within my cells, yes, indeed.
Would you suggest I keep taking this supplement?
I would. I can't guarantee it's going to extend your life. I can't guarantee it's going to eliminate any diseases or cure any diseases.
But we do know that oxidative stress is part of those disease processes. I don't want to wait until I'm 80 years old and find out that I should have taken it.
For more, go to our website at abcnews.com.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Major universities and government agencies initiated and continue self-funded studies following the ABC Primetime Investigative Report you just viewed that originally aired in 2005. These studies continue to reveal more scientific evidence about Protandim's unique benefits. They are published in major scientific and medical journals. The next video will bring you up to date.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandim is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandim has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN chief medical correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandim's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units. For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Crescent Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging. Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed, because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by 3 U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. Simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The ingredients in Protandim were actually selected because they are largely metabolized by the liver, which does not interfere with most prescription drugs, which are generally metabolized by the kidneys. So the general answer to that is yes, it is safe. The immediate benefits of Protandim are, within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is, if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time. So the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today, and do I have control of these slides, or is I do? Okay. Let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs, and I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is, or increased energy state, is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to a electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important, and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put him on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay, but aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. Alone in the antioxidant world, okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure or energy expenditure of the body may be used to synthesize and optimize glutathione levels. That's pretty impressive, 6% of the entire energy output of the body. It is also the only non-enzyme antioxidant that doesn't become a free radical and in fact has a very interesting corollary when it becomes oxidized, because what happens is it complexes to another spent glutathione molecule, and the compound then becomes GSSG, and GSSG has been shown in animal studies at least to promote and induce delta wave sleep. We all know the importance of that in terms of the aging process, so this, even in its used up form, functions as a very useful product. It not only functions as an antioxidant itself, but alone again in the world of antioxidants, it is an absolutely essential component of antioxidant enzymes, namely glutathione peroxidase, and most importantly, the glutathione transferases. And I bring that up because glutathione transferase abnormalities have now been associated with virtually every cancer known to man, and probably with a lot more than that. And therefore, by promoting the production of glutathione transferases through improving glutathione, we may be doing even more than I'm able to talk about right now. In addition, if that were not enough, let's keep going. It's a chelator. In fact, it's 50% as effective as oral chelation in getting rid of mercury. It has an effect on other heavy metals, but they're not as pronounced as mercury, and mercury is pretty ubiquitous in an environment, so it kind of comes as a freebie. And it detoxifies organic pollutants, perhaps the best known one of which is the 2-carbon fragment that we know as alcohol. And in fact, without glutathione, you ultimately get a hangover because you stop the process at acetaldehyde, which is phase one detox, and that in itself is a free radical. And obviously, many of us may have felt the effects of that if we didn't have enough glutathione. Now, why is it important in aging? Well, these are old data, and I think they're probably not as robust as they should be, but I'll give you what is available now. Glutathione levels decrease with age. The data would suggest it's 1% a year beginning in the 20s. I think that's too little, too late, but that's only my opinion right now. I haven't proved it. There are some very interesting things, though. Age-matched normals, okay, reveal that anybody at, say, 45 who's had his first heart attack or has asthma or whatever other disease you want to use has a lower glutathione level than somebody of that age who's well. So disease causes decrease in glutathione and an accelerated decrease compared to normals. Glutathione happens to be, and this is perhaps the take-home message, it's the major protector of mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is that DNA within the cells that's responsible, if you will, for the electron transport chain that produces every bit of energy in your body. And we know from pathologic data that if you take a biopsy from a 90-year-old and compare it to a biopsy in a 5-year-old, the mitochondrial DNA in the 90-year-old is only 5% normal compared to the 5-year-old. So obviously we destroy our mitochondrial DNA, we destroy our energy, and we age. Maintenance of normal mitochondrial DNA is directly correlated, and it's got an R value above 9.9 with aging. So the higher your glutathione, the less you age. And I think
it's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
of other times, let the wind blow. Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper.
Let the wind blow.